Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
Well, Jeff, I'm so glad that we can continue talking about conflict resolution. I think that when we talked about it in our last podcast, somehow we jinxed my life. And I've had to put into practice the things that you were talking about in that podcast. So maybe you can talk some more about conflict resolution today.
Well, you know, it's funny. The same thing happened to me. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's an important subject, you know, because like we talked about the last time, it's a part of life. It's part of the fallen world that we live in. And, you know, like we did talk about, it's not always negative. I mean, conflict is one of those things that handled properly can actually, you know, glorify God and bless other people and actually help us grow up into Christ. And so I think it's a worthwhile subject. And I think it's good to define what conflict is. I mean, if you just look it up on the internet, it's kind of there's different definitions, but the idea of there's disagreement, there's an argument, there's some kind of quarrel or squabble, something that has caused tension and potentially division between people. It's a part of the fallen world we live in. And God's given us some practical tools to manage conflict or bring resolution to conflict in a way that glorifies Him.
I know that you want to share those tools with us, but I wonder if we could go back and just talk a little bit about how God causes the conflict to reveal something. And when I was first hearing that from you a couple of weeks ago, I recognized that it was true. I didn't really want to receive it because I just want to have like the tools to get through the conflict. Bada-bing, bada-bang, it's over. But since you shared that, I've actually been reading the Bible a little differently. And in my own devotional time, I'm working through Genesis and Exodus, and I'm just looking at how God used conflict to bring people to a place where they made the kind of decisions to get the whole, really the whole narrative of God moving, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I think about the Joseph story. I think about the Moses story. I mean, this morning I'm reading about the confrontation with Pharaoh, and God sends Moses in, and Moses goes in the confidence of God, and then Pharaoh says, oh, you think you want to go out and worship God? Your quotas aren't going to change, but right. You're going to have to get more of the supplies yourself. Have a nice day. And then all the Israelites are like, why did you create this trouble for us? Well, we know the end of the story that God really wants to reveal themselves, and He's going to do it through conflict.
Yeah, conflict is one of the greatest tools that God has in His tool shed to get us to come to grips with our own condition. And I think we even talked about that in the last podcast, the idea that our self-perception is never accurate. We need something, somebody external to us to give us the true picture of what we're like. And conflict, God permits it to happen to bring those things to the surface. And if that doesn't happen, if there is no conflict, then we're like a bull in a china closet. There won't be any motivation to change.
And not only that, we're not taken to that place of perfection. And I don't mean perfection in like everything shiny and new and unspoiled. I mean, the place of perfection in the sense that it speaks to being a complete person.
Exactly. And being a mature person is making good decisions regardless of the context that you find yourself in. Regardless of the stimulus that's come into your life, you respond in a way that glorifies God and honors other people. And when we have conflict, it's because those things aren't our highest priorities. What are our highest priorities is me. My pleasure, my comfort. So conflict brings things to the surface that aren't going to get surfaced any other way. And when God uses conflict to bring them to the surface, if we don't now interact with them properly, we're just going to keep going down the path we were on rather than down that new path towards being the mature man or woman of Christ that God's called us to be.
Not very many people are born mature and wise, are they?
I've never met one, actually. And you know, it's interesting. This is maybe another topic for a different conversation. But even the whole idea of there's terminology by one of my favorite theologians where he talks about the idea of indigenous sin versus alien sin. And our indigenous sin is us. It's who we are and our hardwiring. And that's our natural bent. But then alien sin is everybody's a sinner. And now their choices affect me. And so I'm under the influence, like, so you think of Israel under the influence of Egypt. And they had their own indigenous sin, but they had this alien sin that was on top of them. And what that alien sin does in our lives is this external influence on our lives, sometimes called oppression, is the oppression moves us to think, well, our problem is the oppression that I'm experiencing. If I didn't have these external things pressing on me, then I wouldn't be the kind of person I am. And what the Exodus narrative shows is that, no, you get them out of the oppressive situation, get them out from under the alien sin, so that you can actually get them to deal with what really matters, and that's that indigenous sin. And conflict is a mechanism to help that take place. So conflict is going to arise, but again, the crazy thing about the Bible, and of course the way Jesus navigated was, yeah, he initiated conflict. There were times when he intentionally initiated it because there was no other way to get these people to come to grips with what their real issue was. And it wasn't that which was external to them, it's that which was internal to them.
So let's get down to the practical, the nitty-gritty. So when God guides our lives through those situations, he directs our paths through seasons of conflict. What are some good ways, not for the rest of the world, but for us to behave? What are some skills that need to be up and running in our lives?
The first thing is, when there's a conflict, always ask yourself, am I the primary cause of this conflict or not? In other words, principle number one is, if you're in conflict with somebody else, always examine yourself first to see what you've done that may be the cause of the conflict. And in the management realm, where I was trained within the corporate 7-Eleven Southland Corporation structure, was done sort of in the context of, you give duties or tasks to your employees to do, and then they don't accomplish that task. They don't do what you told them to do. Well, instead of your first thought being, they intentionally disregarded what I told them, your first thought should be, it didn't get done because I probably didn't communicate it clearly. The initial flaw is not their carrying out what they want them to do. The initial flaw is, I didn't make it clear enough. They didn't fully understand it. So I probably contributed to the very thing that now is annoying to me.
So the onus is on the communicator manager to make things clear, not on the receiver of the communication.
Yeah, and it may be that you communicated clearly or whatever, but again, our sin nature always defaults to, if I've got a conflict, the conflict was generated by the other person. And when we understand the truth about ourselves that God reveals to us in his word, that we, our self-perception is probably wrong, what we've got to do is, right off the bat, we need to say, I'm having conflict with this person, and I'm probably the main reason this conflict exists. So if you can get that, if you can wrap your mind around that, that you're probably the main reason this conflict exists, it immediately then pushes you into humility. You're not going to go on the attack, because more than likely you generated the response the other person has been giving. That's sort of the first thing. The second thing that I think that follows on that, and again, a lot of this, you could actually connect this right to the definition of love in 1 Corinthians 13, is think the best about the other person from the beginning, even if their history isn't perfect. So in other words, hey, I'm probably the main cause of this conflict. And secondly, that person, their response, this isn't natural for them. It's out of character for them. There must be something that's contributing to the response that they just gave me. And you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, even if their history isn't perfect.
That's a good one. That's hard to do.
It is. And the classic example of that to me, you know, going back to Moses, and this is part of the leadership principles too, is when God says, hey, go down the hill because the people down there, man, they've rebelled against me. And, you know, Moses goes down there and they're worshiping the golden calf. And then he comes to Aaron, you know, who he left in charge. And he says, Aaron, what did these people do to you that caused you to let them do this? He didn't say, Aaron, what are you doing, man? Why did you let this happen? He gave him the benefit of the doubt. There must be some extenuating circumstances. There must have been some pressure on you that was unique, because you permitted to happen something that's totally out of character. But he's giving him the benefit of the doubt.
This might take you off track a little bit. Let's analyze Aaron's response.
He defers. He tries to divert his own personal responsibility for what happened. Well, these people, you know how they are, you know, blah, 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 blah. So he's trying to relieve himself of the responsibility. So both, it's a really interesting dynamic taking place there.
So Moses gives Aaron an out, quote unquote.
Yes. Right.
And the mature thing for Aaron to do would to humble himself right away, but Aaron instead takes the out.
He takes the out, yeah.
And we see conflict come back into Aaron's life in the future.
Absolutely. And what's so interesting is if Aaron would have followed the first principle we just talked about, he would have said, you know what? I did something to contribute to this chaotic situation that now exists. I'm responsible at some level for what's taking place here. It wasn't something done to me. It was something that I permitted to happen for whatever reason. And I bear responsibility for it.
I have to pause there for a grace moment just for a second.
Okay.
The one thing I love about the Lord is that Aaron had a heritage and the priests of Israel. So that fail was not the ultimate disqualifier for him.
Absolutely. And grace always overcomes stupidity and selfishness. And that sort of ties in with that second principle that I just talked about where, you know, give the person the benefit of the doubt from the beginning, even if their history isn't perfect. So, you know, you don't want to judge Aaron's life, a whole life, based on one stupid event. None of us want anybody to judge our lives based on one stupid event, one dumb choice we made, even though that choice we made may have ripple effects for years, that one choice. But we don't want anybody to judge the summary of our life based on one event.
And it would seem that the Lord doesn't.
The Lord doesn't. That's the beauty of God's grace.
So is there a third one?
Yeah. The third one is basically, you know, a lot of times conflict is the result of bad communication or miscommunication or lack of information. And so basically the third one is assume there's a reasonable explanation for anything you don't really understand right now. If there's some nugget, some piece of information that contributed to the conflict, and there almost always is, what you want to do is assume that there's a good and reasonable explanation for the person reacting the way that they did, for them making the choice that they did. You don't know what it is right now, but give them the benefit of the doubt. Something, when you hear the whole story, it would make sense to you. And here's a book that I recommend where this is so laid out in such a great way. There's a book called Cross-Cultural Conflict.
Okay.
By Dwayne Elmer. Dr. Dwayne Elmer, E-L-M-E-R. And Dwayne Elmer is my favorite writer on cross-cultural ministry. He's a brilliant guy. In that book, he uses this example. He breaks it all down in 8 steps from Joshua 22, where after the land has been conquered, the 2.5 tribes that wanted to stay east of the Jordan, they build an altar there. And it creates this massive, massive conflict where now the Israeli people are ready to go to war with one another. And one of the things that he points out as he walks you through conflict resolution from that specific text is the idea that Phinehas, who represented the 10.5 tribes, he just went right for the throat of the rebels, of the rebellious 2.5 tribes. You're rebels. And you're going to bring God's judgment down on us, just like in the past. And what happens is when the 2.5 tribes explain their reasoning, why they built the altar, it's like, oh, okay. Well, when I know what your motives are, then, okay, we can deal with this at a different level. There doesn't have to be the anger, the animosity, the potential violence. So basically, and worked out in practical form, the idea of, there's something you don't know or you don't understand that went into that person making that decision. And if you knew that, there's a reasonable, plausible explanation probably for why they chose to do what they did.
It's more in our nature to create a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, and what happens is we assign motives. You know, we're masters at telling other people, well, I know why you did what you did. Well, no, you don't. You're not a mind reader. And, you know, I use this a lot in marriage. You know, just the idea that a lot of times, and obviously there are exceptions, so don't, you know, no hate mail or anything. But the idea is a lot of times wives think that their husbands should know what they're thinking and what they're feeling. Us guys, we just kind of stumble around and bump into things, you know, we don't, whatever. And a lot of times our wife, well, you should have known me. You should know me well enough to know what I'm thinking. Well, actually, we're not really clairvoyant or anything. We don't really know. So if you don't tell us, we're probably not going to get
it. Yeah, I use that conversation, and it kind of goes kind of how you said it. And it's like,
exactly.
And my wife will be like, you know, but I don't always want to have to draw you a map.
Exactly. Exactly. And some of it is our fault. We don't really pay attention to that. But ultimately, yeah, we can't guess motives.
That's why, marital conflict is easy to, we all can relate to it. Us married folks can totally relate to it.
Totally.
And our wives can forgive us for outing them.
Exactly. And so the fourth principle is, and this is sort of more from a group dynamic perspective, but I think it's relevant, is wait patiently until you have access to the person that can provide the facts from their perspective. And it kind of couples up with the point we just made. There is a plausible, probably rational explanation for why the person did that. So give them the benefit of the doubt. Don't speculate. Don't try to fabricate why they did it until you can actually talk to them. Restrain your natural inclination to assign motives and wait for the person who can then actually explain it. And you'll find that will decrease conflict. It'll decrease tension.
That's good.
And then part of that is the next thing, and probably the last main thing, and you know, there's other practical things you can do, some of which Elmer points out in his book, is, you know, while you're waiting until that person, and I'm kind of saying the same thing in different ways, but until that person shows up with the actual facts or information, you know, refuse to engage in any negative speculation. Because what almost always happens is when we try to assign motives, when we speculate about what a person's motives are, it's almost always going to be negative. We're going to think of the reasons why they did this, and it's always going to be negative.
Once your emotions kick in, you feel wronged. And while you're angry, you feel silly to have this really silly reason pointed out to you. So it is better to calm down and engage when calm.
There's a basic leadership angle too, maybe another principle to just think about. And this is particularly for Christians, difficult for Christians, and even more difficult for missionaries. And the idea is this: we tend to agree to things because you're a brother in the Lord, I'm in the brother of the Lord. You're a missionary, I'm a missionary. So we have so much in common. So we agree to do something. We enter into an agreement to do something before we understand what it is we're agreeing to. And again, Elmer sort of summarizes this with the phrase of, you know, pursue understanding before you pursue agreement. But we just think it sounds so spiritual, so mature to agree to something because I know this person, I love this person, I'm going to agree to it. And then once we start down the path, we realize, wait a minute, I agreed to something that I didn't fully understand. And right now, I don't agree with it. And now you have a massive conflict.
When I was becoming a missionary, you know, I agreed to jump on board with this mission, but there were no details forthcoming. And then once the details started hitting, I did not like the details and the way the details were playing out. I had a picture of what I thought the mission was, but it wasn't the same picture my leader had. And we both assumed that the details would all work out. We'd all continue to be singing Kumbaya no matter what happened.
That's right.
That did not happen that way.
And that is probably the major contributor to conflict among missionaries that drives them home from the field sooner than they expected to be home. And it's just simply that. There was a desire to agree before there was true understanding. And what's funny about that is the world has this figured out. Like when you're going to take a job with a company, they have a job description. They have the specific tasks laid out. They sometimes share with you what the goals are going to be and how to measure what success is going to look like, what the rubric is for measuring success. I mean, the world has figured this out because conflict hinders profit.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be profitable if your employees are not on the same page and there's conflict between them. But for some reason, in the spiritual realm, we think, well, because we all know Jesus and we all sing Kumbaya together, that we don't need to get into that level of detail. It almost sounds unspiritual. Don't you trust me, brother? Well, yeah, I love you and I trust you, but it's going to be easier to trust you when you know exactly what your responsibilities right. are going to be, and I'm going to hold you accountable, and you'll know exactly what my responsibilities are, so we can hold each other accountable.
But there's also something, Jeff, when we talk about having clear communication, that this is something that happens in the church. And I just would want to put it out there as a challenge. One of the things that we say often, especially in our tribe, is blessed are the flexible. And sometimes
right.
great laziness comes with that. We don't think through
Absolutely.
What the goals of the mission are.
Right.
We don't think through what the giftedness of those that we have charge over have. And we expect this tremendous flexibility, but we also expect results. And we're not very flexible as leaders what we expect those results to be. So it is a two-way street, and we need to
absolutely
be very careful of using these oversimplified mantras. And I'm using the term mantra on purpose, because that's what they are.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what they are.
And understand that it's a two-way street. And if we're leading people, we also need to see ourselves as training those people. And the last thing we want to communicate is that you have to expect everybody under you to be flexible to your goals.
Exactly. And it kind of what weaves all through this is communication. I mean, when there is good communication, conflict can be minimalized. You'll always have conflict, but conflict will be minimalized if there is good communication. And here's the interesting thing that I found over the years is that, and again, from the secular world, but also in the ministry world and the missions world, is bad communication easily slips into character assassination. And what I mean by that is, you know, somebody wants to get something done and they don't communicate what they want done clearly. And so the person they're communicating to doesn't fully understand what this person is trying to tell them. And so they don't act the way that person wants them to. And then here's the danger. The person who told them what to do can now say, well, they didn't do it, and start to attack their character and say, well, yeah, that's just part of their character. They can't ever do anything right. They can't follow directions. And so all of a sudden, you're criticizing somebody's character. It wasn't a character issue at all. It was a communication issue. If we started with, you know what? I'm probably the reason they didn't do what I wanted them to do. I didn't communicate it clearly. If you start with that, then you're not going to slip into assassinating their character or saying it's a character issue rather than, no, it's just a communication issue.
Those failures in communication, when used as a character assassination, they never go away. It's always a card you play in the future.
No. And in most cases, you know, what I've learned over the years, it's seldom when it comes to leadership, unity, cohesion, you know, all those things. It's seldom a character issue. It's almost always bad communication skills, especially on the part of the leadership.
So I think the one of the things that, again, I come to, going back to the Moses story, it's humility.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
I think it's the book of Exodus that says Moses was the most humble man in the world, or whoever lived. And he wasn't always the most humble guy. He got that way through walking through tremendous conflict, but also staying very, very close to the Lord.
Absolutely. And like we talked about last week, although the Bible does clearly say humble yourselves, there is some responsibility for self-humility throughout the rest of the Bible. Humility is usually the byproduct of somebody else, something external to us, God's Word, the Holy Spirit, some other person, some other believer, showing us what we're unable to see about ourselves alone. Never trust self-perception. You know, I just beat on that drum all the time. Your self-perception is not accurate. And as long as you think your self-perception is accurate, you'll never be a humble person. You talked about if somebody listened to part one, they've already heard this, but the idea of taking out the garbage is not it's not an individual sport.
Yeah, sometimes
it's a team sport
because it's heavy lifting involved.
Yeah, and finding not only because it's heavy lifting, but finding the things that are garbage, we need more than one set of eyes on them.
Yeah.
On what's garbage. We need somebody else's input to know, that should be thrown out. This should be kept. If we only make that decision ourselves, we're going to throw away stuff we need to keep, and we're going to keep stuff we actually need to throw away. Yeah, so big subject, you know, I think that's probably covered it from a lot of different angles. I would highly recommend the book that I was telling you about. Also, there's a good little short practical explanation on a friend of mine who's a Christian psychiatrist named Carl Benzio, Dr. Carl Benzio, through the Lighthouse Network. There's a great little 17-minute video that he did on conflict resolution, kind of hit some of these angles, but from a different perspective. Really good stuff. We can put that in the resources too.
Those are excellent resources. And I love what you said. And this is the thing that I'm going to chew on over the next week or so through the holidays when we have a house full of guests and everything, is that my self-perception's never accurate.
Yeah, that's hard to come to grips with, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah, you can't swallow that all in one bite. Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.